All right, it's the Pop Tower Podcast. It's episode 34. I'm Peter W. Dawson.
I'm James Bullock.
And we're here to talk about video games, television, sort of, and movies. Trifecta. Sacred. How you doing today, James?
Oh, man. Well, you said sort of. All I can think about is the exact show that we're talking about today because of one of the characters being a sort of character.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of stuff you can get into there.
Yeah.
But I want to start out on a more somber note. I just want to pour one out, metaphorically speaking. I'm not actually going to pour anything out because,
you're not a wasteful person.
Yeah, and I'm also surrounded by carpet, so it's like that. Even though I did it on the wood over in the other room, that wouldn't be good. There's no good.
I know, then you're just sitting there looking at it the whole time we're doing the podcast. And he's like, I got to clean this up when I finish. I got to clean this up. Why did I do this?
Well, because I wanted to get ants, apparently. Because that's how you get ants. Which has no bearing on what we're talking about, but I will always drop that reference when I can. So, Telltale Games, a game company that's been around for quite a while now.
Yes.
And are usually credited with help reviving the adventure game genre. Yes. Have sadly shuttered their doors, more or less, and with much controversy. I don't know. We probably shouldn't really get into the controversial part of it because it could get kind of political. And
yeah, and we still don't know all the details either, too. It's like some of he said, she said, certain people are very pro Telltale during their experience, a lot of them are very anti, and you know, just the overall narrative of game companies not appreciating their employees.
Probably the most neutral thing I would say is I hope everyone lands on their feet and everyone gets what they were owed or deserved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was one thing that I definitely was so happy about seeing the fallout from it was just how much the gaming community came together in hopes of trying to help everyone land on their feet.
Oh, yeah. No, there's threads online that lists every game company that's hiring for the type of people that they had. So, and I can think of a few games that probably could have used some more of their employees.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they did Telltale-style games, but they... We're kind of lagging in a few areas.
Yeah, yeah.
It happens. But yeah, so Telltale Games, they did such things as the Walking Dead Telltale series,
mm-hmm.
which was it season one, season two, 100 Days or something like that?
Yeah, 400 Days, Michonne's spinoff.
Yep.
And then we had the New Frontiers, and now we're on the final season.
Yeah, so that's a total of...
Six.
Five seasons?
Six.
Oh, six, right. Yep.
Man.
I can't count.
It was funny. I really didn't realize it was that many until I just said it.
Yeah. Because we had all that. We had Batman, the Telltale series.
Two seasons of that, yep.
Yep. But the first season was pretty good, actually. I really liked what...
I just played the second season about a month ago, and it was really good.
Yeah, both seasons of that were like... I still think there's a couple things that need to be improved on, of course.
Right.
But I got a good... And that's a really fun one to do without talking. Because like, my favorite thing to do in a Telltale game is because silence is always an option, only picking silence.
Yeah, just picking the ellipses. Just let that run. Yeah.
Or my favorite combination, do that, and then we have a choice between violent action or peaceful action, always picking violent. So you're just this silent, violent thug. I mean, don't do it on a serious playthrough, but if you're doing a replay, it's a fun way to do it.
Yeah, you're just having fun with it.
Yeah, like Wolf Among Us.
Yeah, that was one of the things I always loved about it, is the fact to see what can happen if you do it this way.
And then my personal favorite from all of them is actually Tales from the Borderlands.
Oh my goodness, man. What a great season. Great series, period. Like, I know we were both hoping for a second season.
I know, and like that was the one they never confirmed. Like, we got Wolf Among Us Season 2 was supposed to be coming, and that's not happening.
I think God of War, Game of Thrones. Yeah, same time. Game of Thrones is supposed to get a second season.
I did not like that one as
much. I actually did. By the end of the season, I really did want to see a second season.
I hated the villains.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the villains were so boring. It's like, oh, you really want to punch in the face? Don't. You really want to punch him in the face? Don't. Oh, you really want to punch him in the face? Too bad, they already won.
I just want to see Samoa Joe in the game again, that's all.
Oh, that's true.
That wasn't a wrestling game.
So, shout out to Samoa Joe, yeah.
Yeah.
he was great in that. And
he
then,
really
was. But yeah, no, it was just... Yeah, that was one of the ones I didn't really like as much. Although, it would have been interesting to see what they did with the second season, given how the game can end.
Right.
And then... Because that was probably the one that had the most consequences for some of your choices.
Yeah, it really did. It really did. And that was one of the aspects I think we don't... A lot of people don't give credit to is the fact of the community that it built with the idea of seeing how people reacted, how people made choices after you play through an episode, and you'll see like 43% chose to kill this person while you were in the lower percentile, the higher percentile. Like, I always loved that aspect of the Telltale game.
Yeah. And it, just the specific decisions you can make that actually did have consequences.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people always make fun of that. Like, at the beginning of every episode, you know, your choices will affect the outcome of this game, and I know a lot of people always make fun of the fact that a lot of times the choices don't, but they don't get credit to when they actually do. Especially when move from season to season. As we've seen, definitely in the Walking Dead seasons. Like, some major things tie into each season.
I was gonna say, Walking Dead's probably the most... It's probably their best example, but like I said, Tales from the Borderlands, especially from episode to episode, there's some big changes that can happen.
Yes, yes.
And that was easily one of the funniest games they ever made.
Oh, one of the funniest games I ever played, period.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Enhance! You can't just say enhance. And, like, the twist on, like, the masked man and everything.
Oh, man, such great stuff.
Really also, love. Most adorable romance ever.
Oh.
We probably shouldn't spoil that. Yeah,
if you have the opportunity, definitely play that one. If you want to give a chance to a Telltale game, that's the one to do it.
I don't ship often, but when I do.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, Telltale, it will be missed. It is a shame that final season of Walking Dead had to get cut short. It's a shame we're not going to get Wolf Among Us Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... Because there's a lot of potential there, but... Frank, talk for a second. You know, it's an episode of The Punisher, and I'll be frank. they were using an outdated engine when they started.
Yeah.
And while they were making do pretty well, especially with the artistic choices, the engine was becoming notorious for having problems.
Oh, very much so.
And there was a whole game that just no one cared about, because Guardians of the Galaxy did not get much attention at all.
Yeah, and I there was another game I recently played after I got my Xbox One. I played it, and it was really good. But it was just one of those things. I think it was fatigue. It really was. It was just they had too many of the same games, even with established franchises that were completely different from the other. Just the fact that it was the same type of game.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit borderline fatigue. Especially when you're going from Guardians of the Galaxy, we had Walking Dead final season out, and we just had New Frontiers. I guess they had Batman season 2. I don't know how many people played the Minecraft seasons. I never even played season 2, even though I did mostly enjoy season 1.
Yeah, well, the first season got a lot of buzz, but I don't know how much the second season got.
No, I don't remember any buzz. And to top it off, and that was one of the reasons I was kind of waiting around to play it, was because I was expecting a disc version with all the episodes. And I don't even think they even put out a disc version of season 2.
No, I don't think they did.
Yeah,
so...
It was sad because they had a formula. They had a blueprint after they found the success of Walking Dead. And unfortunately, it was just too costly.
Yeah, and there was not enough innovation was probably the other thing. Because, we've seen some other ones do some really interesting things. Like, I can't remember the name of the game, but there's this one... They introduced an idea that your character... could have skills and such, which means certain, if you play Pillars of Eternity, for example, you can have certain dialogue options if you have certain stats or whatnot.
Right,
they did that with a narrative game. So in a dialogue focused game, you can only do certain things if you have these certain skills.
Right,
and I thought that was an interesting kind of RPG light mechanic they added, and it'd be interesting. Would have been interesting to see that in Telltale, trying to think here. If you had certain segments where you can only play as one character or the other, and it would dictate more on if you had the character who had more experience with guns or the character who had more experience not with guns.
Right. Or just to even tie it in right to Telltale, if they had thought about this a lot earlier, with the whole narrative, the character arc of Clementine in The Walking Dead, and just how the stuff that she learned, like stuff that Lee taught her in the first season, how that could have played into the second season, be it like through stealth or through combat, like teaching her certain things that she could have done. Like one of the key moments in the second season when they teach her how to clip a walker in the knee to drop him down, then you can stab him in the head. Well, what if like that was an optional move that she could have learned?
Yeah. No, there's. Yeah, and if not that, she picked up some other move, like right. Like she learned how to use a bow. So instead of getting up close, she just used a bow and arrow.
Exactly.
No, there was a lot of options, and it's a shame that, it's just a shame because even like I said, even with a lack of innovation in some respects, I mean, like Batman season 2, which just wrapped up not too long ago,
right?
That was really good.
Really
so
great storytelling.
Even,
yes.
Yeah, even without the innovation, although some would have been welcome, you know, there was definitely still some quality there. So it's really a darn shame.
And to tie it in, and with the very end of The Walking Dead season, final season right now, like I said, I don't know if we're ever going to get the third and fourth episodes, the final episodes, but overall, this season, just from the first two alone, is so much better than the New Frontier season that came before it. And it's almost like, man, this felt like a return to form. And it's unfortunate that we may never get the actual conclusion to that story.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yep.
But,
tumbles.
Yep.
We gotta end on a laugh here. We gotta be a little bit happy about this in this whole episode because it might get a little negative by the end of it.
Look, man, if all else fails, one day we'll be king and we'll be able to just eat as many waffles as we want. Speaking of it being king and eating waffles,
well, there we go.
Disenchantment. You tell what part I really like.
Yeah. It's so funny because that. The one character you were mentioning is the one character I was thinking before we did this, I really wish we would have seen more of.
Yeah, I figured as much. I can already guess where you're going to go with this.
Yeah.
So, Disenchantment is a Netflix original that Fox actually passed on because it was created by Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons and Futurama. And, yeah, he... like I said, he pitched it to 20th Century Fox. They passed. Netflix ordered it. 20 episodes, effectively 2 seasons, although I think it's going to technically just be 1 season with part A and part B.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going for because they haven't said, they've said like season 1 and they've said there's a second season, but it's more of like, hey, we just got 20 episodes, so we're just going to put them all together.
Yeah, and as a result, has a very familiar art style, stars more than a few familiar actors, although quite a few actors... I'm actually impressed they got, because... So, to go over it, Disenchantment is essentially a parody of fantasy series set in the world of Dreamland. But then there's all these other, like, lands. Like, there's Darkmire, there's, what was the other one? Bentwood.
Yeah.
That one does make me chuckle.
Because
it still sounds real. So it's like, oh, it's a double atonement, but it's like, you know, I could have, it's not as, like, stupid as some other names. There's Elfwood, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's mostly their lampoon fantasy tropes while also telling epic stories, much like how Futurama would both ape sci-fi and have fun with sci-fi.
Right.
Like, that's what they're going for. And it stars, Abby Jacobson as Princess Bean. That's not her real name.
No,
her full name is, but that's what everyone calls her.
Yeah, because her I love the fact that somebody actually wrote out her name, her full name. Because I'm not gonna butcher it. I'm not gonna even try. You just look it up on Wikipedia and see what it sounds like. And somebody actually wrote this down and said, "Hey, you got to say this at least a couple of times."
Yeah.
Because we hear her full name throughout the series at least a few times by certain people and. Man, I don't know how.
I'm gonna try. I'm probably not getting it right. But
okay.
I mean, I butcher names all the time on this, so
I can get the first name. That's about it.
Thibini Maribini de la Rochambeau Gronkwitz.
That's actually better than I would have expected.
It still wasn't right.
I know. It really went to Spanish territory by the end of it.
Well, especially when you hit Rochambeau, yeah. You're really going French or Spanish. I'm pretty sure that's Rochambeau.
Yeah.
Maybe Cajun, but I could not do a Cajun accent to save my life.
You're not going to be able to film for Gambit now?
Nope.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to show you a real good time. That's my Gambit. All right. So, yeah. Oh, but, yeah, so Princess Bean, and what's kind of great is in the first episode, she gets gifted a demon named Lucy.
Yes.
Which presumably is short for Lucifer. And played by Eric Andre.
Yeah,
and
I was about to say, I was so surprised that was his character.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea that was his voice when I first heard it.
No, he's got some talent.
Yeah.
I mean, well, of course, like, there's a lot of talented voice actors on here, as well as just experienced comedian types. Like, Nate Faxon plays Elfo.
Yes.
Who's just always happy.
He's supposed to be very happy.
Yeah, it's like even when horrible things will happen, he'll just be like, I'm Elfo!
He is definitely the glass half full character of the group.
Yeah, just always happy. And then, John DiMaggio plays King Zog.
Oh.
It is Zog, right?
Yes, it's Zog, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they spell it with what is it called when there's a line through the middle?
I don't know,
That's not an umlaut, that's something else.
Yeah.
Okay, King Zog. Probably my favorite character on the show.
Easily.
Yeah, we're going to jump ahead a bit to my favorite gag, but one of my favorite jokes in the whole thing is just the bit where it's like one of the knights is like getting something like, before what reward will I receive if I go on this quest? And he's just like, the money I pay you. Like, it's John DiMaggio very much playing a king as if he were, I'm going to probably go with Frank from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, okay. So Danny DeVito's character. That's probably, like, with a little bit of Will Ferrell's Anchorman, so a little Ron Burgundy in the middle.
Right.
But that's especially with, like, the breakfast of just waffles galore. It's like, yeah, I'd probably do that if I was king.
Yeah.
I was like Ron Burgundy. He's like, I'm just enjoying my nice meal of steak, waffles, and fries, and, of course, scotch. You could totally see that being what King Zog does.
Yes,
so, yeah,
definitely.
He's just like this, you know, burnt out, cynical, but delightful character.
He's very happy being a king, but he doesn't really want to be he doesn't want the responsibilities. It's just too much. It's just burned him out by the end of it. And we find out a few little things here and there exactly why he's kind of I hate to put, like, the pun in there, but he's kind of disenchanted with the whole idea of being king.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole idea. Like, everyone's just kind of disenchanted with the wonders of their world.
Yeah. Except for Lucy. Lucy's having a great old time.
Oh, well, yeah. Lucy and Elfo are both very positive characters. Meanwhile, Bean's very much hard-drinking, just kind of out of it.
That's one of the key things, is Bean doesn't want to be a princess.
The rest of these characters are in the main cast, but I'm just going to kind of zip through them real quick here. So, because there's Tress MacNeille playing Queen Una,
yes.
Who is the second queen, because she's like a, I guess amphibian's probably most accurate.
Yeah, from Darkmire.
Yeah, and then Matt Berry plays Prince Merkimer from Bentwood. Matt Berry of IT Crowd and Toast of London fame.
Yeah, it has a great gag early in the series that plays throughout the entire season.
Yeah, no, he's pretty top notch, and of course he is voice. He the actor himself has a voice made for this type of work.
Very much so.
Thankfully, he totally nails it. If you've ever seen anything he's done, he always just says the most bizarre things. And then we get David, voice actor veteran David Herman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's in there. He plays a few different characters. He's like the Herald, and then he's also Merkimer's older brother.
Yeah.
Geisbert, that's the name. And then Maurice LaMarche, of course, is also in. He did a lot of stuff in Futurama.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays, he's a prime minister, right?
Yeah. He's kind of, yeah. It's revealed pretty early on. Like he actually literally has a third eye. So it's just great.
And solid character name, slight pun, Audival.
Yes.
I'll take that. We got Lucy Montgomery plays Bunty.
Yes.
That's a pretty terrible name.
Yeah, very much so. But I love the character because she's presented as kind of being dopey and just very helpful. But it's a very, very disturbing side to her that we don't know about until, like, very later on in the season.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I just want to get through the rest of the cast real quick. Because we also got Billy West, and, of course, he's probably, you know, he's super veteran voice actor. Of course, also playing, like, you know, Fry on Futurama, Stimpy on Ren and Stimpy. You know, so very much a veteran voice actor. And in this case, he's Sorcerio, the wizard, or sorcerer, if you will. And I think he also plays a couple of the... Isn't he also... he's also the jester.
Yeah.
And then Noel Fielding, also from IT Crowd fame and other stuff. I think it's The Mighty Boosh is what one of his series is called.
Okay.
And he's Stan the Executioner.
Yeah, just the happiest executioner in the world.
Which, again, makes sense given his natural voice. I'm going to skip over the last one.
That's kind of a spoiler. Yeah.
Yeah, I shouldn't get into that. Let's just say there's another veteran voice actor. Well, a veteran actress who does a pretty good job in her role.
Yeah, especially by the end of the season.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, the only voice I don't really like, and it's kind of unfortunate, is got to be Beans.
Yeah. It just feels off.
Yeah. Like, it's not terrible, but I don't know how the hell, like, this is a glaring problem, and I know I'm not alone in this, like, you know, you agree with me, and I've talked to people about this too. If you can get past Bean's voice, you're gonna probably have a much better time at this than some others will, because I know a lot of people, it's just, they couldn't get into her as a protagonist, and a good chunk of it is probably either her name or her voice.
Yeah. I'm fine with the name, but the voice, and just the way it comes across, like, the way she just comes across as a character just feels odd.
Yeah. I know,
it's hard to put my finger on, it's just something, it's off about the character as a whole, and unfortunately Abby's voice work for that character just doesn't fit.
I can drop a bomb on you here.
Okay.
I'm gonna go 1960s film trivia on you.
Okay.
It's like having Barbara Streisand play a character that should have been played by Carol Channing. I am specifically referencing 1969 film Hello, Dolly. where a 25-year-old woman played a role originated by 50-something-year-old actress. It's like, in this case, she sounds young, which is appropriate. She's supposed to be, like, 19.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, I don't know if, like, should she have sounded more British? Should she, like... It just doesn't work.
No, it really doesn't.
Unfortunately, miscastings can really... just really mess with... If you don't think she's miscast, you're probably going to enjoy this series a lot more.
And I think one of the things, like, tying into the characters, like, the core group... And I understand, like, where they're coming from that end. And the fact that... Okay, Lucy, of course, is a demon, has no connection to the world that they're currently occupying. Elfo is an elf, of course, he's just an elf, so he doesn't have any real connection to the world he's currently occupying. But Bean has been in this, in Dreamland, for all of her life, and it just feels like she's completely disconnected from, like you said, from a vocal perspective, than any of the other characters, including her own father. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, he sounds more in place, and he's just doing standard John DiMaggio.
Right!
Like, that's really all it is. And, like, he's even making stupid jokes, like, that just feel, like, tired old gags still feel funny.
Right.
Because, like, DiMaggio's just nailing it for... And it's... Yeah. Her character itself isn't the best, but it's always hard being the protagonist in one of these series. I mean, like, consider... Fry wasn't that great in the first season of Futurama.
I was going to say that, and I know we talked about this before... And that this feels so much like the first season of Futurama, where all the characters, of course, are getting introduced and getting fleshed out. But it just feels like hers takes a lot longer to get to that point where you feel like, hey, I actually enjoy a character, if you can, compared to the other ones.
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, at least Fry sounded like the voice was correct. I mean, you never... And he was saying stuff that still felt appropriate for the character and everything.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it doesn't work because it feels like she's supposed to be a fish out of water, but she's not.
And she's not even out of water when it comes to when it comes to the perspective of where she's at right now.
I know. So, the writing just feels confused, and you add in the character not having, the right voice, it just feels like... I can't even think of what else to compare it to. It's like if the network really wanted someone to star in a show, even though it really shouldn't have started this person.
It shouldn't be.
Yeah. It's like, why don't we have... It's like, okay, so we're pitching a series about someone who runs a veterinarian clinic. I'd rather run a pet store. Okay, yeah, it's still about animals. And it's also a bar. Combination bar and pet store, you say? Starring Ted Danson. Coming soon to CBS. I don't know. I've gone over trying to explain this as best I can.
It's very hard to explain because it's really weird. It's one of those things that either it's an acquired taste or you'll just never care for it at all.
Yeah. It's probably not until the fourth or fifth episode that the show really took off for me.
Honestly, it wasn't until the eighth out of ten.
Oh, yeah, when we got the mystery of the town.
Yeah. It wasn't entertaining. It was just it felt like standalone episodes that were pretty much ultimately forgettable. It wasn't until the last three episodes that it felt like, wow, I'm actually into the series now. And it's funny because I know a lot of reviewers said that the network only sent, Netflix and everybody sent only the first seven episodes. So you have the worst of the worst until the very end. And then it's like, hey, we're doing reviews on these episodes that aren't the best ones. And then they're telling everyone that this show isn't really that good. And come to find out, no, by the end of it, it's actually very good.
Yeah. No, where they go with it is interesting. And I love episode 8 when they really explore the lost town of, what was it, Cremora?
Yeah, Cremora.
Yeah. Which I'm like, that was actually an interesting bit of world building lore, mm-hmm. too. And I'm a huge sucker for world building. Wasn't the fact that Lord of the Rings felt so impenetrable, the extremist material with the Valar and everything, I would totally be into that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I just love that. R.R. Tolkien's just like, I'm gonna create an entire history for this world, and I do mean an entire history. You might have gone too far. in this case, there's some proper world building. We see more of a narrative structure start to form. Like, in episode 7, stuff happens.
Right.
But episode 8 is when you really start to see, oh, this is what's happening, and you can start to see where it's going. And then big stuff happens in episode 9.
Yeah. It just really escalates. And like I said, by the end of it, I was really, on the edge of my seat because I wanted to see what else could happen. And of course, with only 10 episodes so far, we don't know exactly when we're going to see the rightful conclusion of apparently season 1.
But it's interesting because, like I said, you get 7 episodes. They kind of build on each other, but are mostly disconnected.
Yeah, I would say from a character perspective, it builds on each other. Just getting used to the characters.
Yeah, I was going to say, episode 8 is when you start to get some development, but you don't realize just how important it's going to be until episode 9 and 10 happen.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Yeah, especially with that that cliffhanger on episode 9 leading into episode 10.
Oh my god,
man, that was a great twist. I did not expect that at all. And that was the thing, man, this is what I've been wanting from the show the entire time.
Yeah. I think what it comes down to, if you watch a preview, and you may not necessarily find it that funny, but if you don't have a problem with how Bean's presented there,
yeah,
you should probably give it a look. If you don't think you're going to be able to tolerate her as a female lead, lead,
yeah,
just don't. Because it's funny.
I hate to say it, you say it's a female lead, but it's funny because we can't really say it's just the human lead. She's not really even just a female, she's the human lead.
No, I know, that's what I'm saying. Demon
lead and I elf lead.
Yeah, because, she's the protagonist by far. And she's of the big three in the cast. She's right. Also the female, which is why I said female lead. Yeah. So she's the lead.
Yeah.
Because whenever I say female lead, it sounds like, oh, but it's not like the lead.
Yeah.
Like, no. She's the lead.
And she's not only the lead, she's the human lead.
Yeah. For better or for worse, she's the lead.
She's the lead, yeah.
The visual stuff is pretty good.
I mean, it's Matt Groening, and Groening at his finest. You know, it's no different than anything you've ever seen before. Just.
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody has five fingers, though. Do they?
I didn't notice.
I never even looked. I just thought about it when I said it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just if you're used to the design from the characters on Futurama, you'll be fine with this.
Yeah, it's closer to Futurama than Simpsons, definitely.
Absolutely. Don't know if there's much else to say about this.
No, just... I'd say, honestly, wait until they announce the date for the next 10 episodes.
Yeah.
I would not rush to see it right now.
No, because if it's not going to come out until next August or something like that, you're going to be left with a bad case of blue balls for a while.
Yeah.
I'm going to just flat out say blue balls.
Poor Alpha. I'm just saying that. I'm just thinking, poor Alpha. He tried to get some so badly.
Well, just, you know, he's a nice guy. But I think at this point we're good to move on from series where suit of armor's and all cracked up to be to a movie where suit of armor's kind of important.
Yeah.
So we're going to touch on a recent film, The Predator.
Yes.
Which is the latest entry into the Predator film series, which is one of the most confusing film series out there. More confusing than the Fast and Furious continuity, where for some reason cars from like 2012 were appearing in a story that's still supposed to be set in like 2003.
Yeah.
In this case, yeah, The Predator. It's the sixth Predator. Well, okay.
It's the sixth in the franchise.
Yeah. He's got Predator, Predator 2, Alien vs. Predator, Alien vs. Predator Requiem, and then we had Predators, and now we've got this.
Yes. But key thing about this, it has nothing to do with the Alien vs. Predator movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, none of them have.
No.
Like,
but I mean, they've always kind of alluded to, like, no, they don't. And then it's like, maybe they do. Like, no, this time it has nothing to do with that. Actually, I don't think it has anything to do with Predators either.
It might. Because that's kind of a gray area, because Predators took place on an alien planet.
Right.
So it's hard to say. Like, it definitely connects to Predator 1 and 2, though.
Exactly. It definitely does on that end.
Yeah, like, this was probably the most direct sequel we've gotten since Predator 2.
Because they not only... it's not only obvious that it's connected to those two movies, but they actually kind of like name drop them by saying the years.
Yeah, they mention the years and they hint at a couple of teams.
Right.
A team, which is supposedly Dutch's team from the 1987 film.
Yeah, exactly.
But they never say Dutch or anything like that. I get the feeling they might have tried to rope someone in for a cameo if they'd really felt like
they
it.
Wanted
but they,
so bad. They wanted Arnold to show up so badly.
I would have been happy with that.
There was one moment, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's just one moment at the very end. I was thinking, I said, maybe they found the Predator killer. Arnold's going to show up. And it didn't happen.
It is what it is. But instead, we got ourselves an interesting cast of characters.
Oh, God.
Just to name a few. Well, because we got Boyd Holbrook,
yeah.
Who I remember mostly from Logan.
Yeah.
Where he was the kind of quirky cyborg mercenary type dude.
Yeah. And the complete opposite here, he's just a gruff former army ranger who takes nothing from anybody and
yep.
Terrible father but great soldier. And
well, of course Well, of course he's a terrible father because he's got Jacob Tremblay as a son. Jacob Tremblay has to always be damaged.
Poor Jacob Tremblay. No, actually I shouldn't say poor Jacob Tremblay because we find out in his character he is the next stage in evolution, human evolution, so...
Of course. Look.
this movie, man. This movie.
We'll get to that. But, yeah, we also got Keegan-Michael Key. in what... You know, I don't even know where to begin with his character.
I'm not even laughing at the fact that he's in the movie. I'm laughing at the fact that his character was so out there. Like, this dude was laughing so much, I'm laughing.
Yeah. And then we get to Olivia Munn. She was was she a biologist, was it?
Yeah, she's a biologist.
Evolutionary biologist.
Yeah, she's a biologist, yeah.
You know what? See, people say they don't buy her as a scientist. I think she pulled it off.
She did a very good job. I was surprised when she showed up and was like, hey, she was spouting off stuff and being all smart. Well, I was like, she pulled that off.
Well, she's got that Aaron Sorkin experience from the newsroom, so she can speak really fast and sound smart.
Oh, true. Oh, yeah. That definitely works with her. I didn't even think about that. Good point.
Yeah. And then the man, the myth, the legend, Thomas Jane.
Hoping you're going to bring that up, man. Thomas Jane, to me, stole the movie.
It's a toss-up for me, because we also, don't forget, we also have Sterling K. Brown.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he did a great job. Oh, man, he did a great job.
Right? Like, well, this is the thing. Because I think what you've kind of figured over just from the... And I think I skipped over... Oh, Elfie Allen.
Yeah.
He's there. he was fine, but, like,
He's there. Between
Keegan-Michael Key just being, like, just out there... Olivia Munn actually being pretty awesome as a lady doc.
Yeah.
I am really focused on gender today. I am sorry. I shouldn't be dropping gender so much. I can't imagine... I'm not even gonna... So Thomas Jane, just being also just... You want to say out there for him? Is that probably accurate?
Yeah. To a certain extent, I guess.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
And then, yeah, we got Sterling K. Brown. Like, yeah, these four alone are amazing in this. And it's kind of unfortunate, then, that Boyd Holbrook plays her lead, and he's kind of uninspired.
Very much so. He's like a wet blanket if there ever was one. He is, like, freaking... If anybody that wants to condemn an actor just walking through a part... It's just sleepwalking through a part. Like, this to me was a perfect example of that.
Yeah. I know, it's like he knew he wasn't going to be as interesting as the others, so he didn't try.
Exactly. It's like, I have to tone down everything about me, so I just pretty much, I'm a human piece of cardboard. Just taking up scenery.
I just realized who we forgot.
Who?
Jake Busey.
Oh my goodness, I forgot he made a... it was not a cameo, per se, but he was a character that was... on screen for a very short amount of time.
Yeah, but it's worth touching because Gary Busey was in Predator 2.
Yes. Yes. When I saw those teeth, I was so happy.
And yeah, his character is actually Gary Busey's son.
Yes. Yes, it is. I loved
it. Like, in-universe and out-of-universe.
That was awesome. I loved it.
And then, I forgot about Yvonne Strahovski, who's now Emmy-nominated.
Yes.
But, yeah, her role in this wasn't great, and
she was the hardcore ex-wife. That was really it.
Yeah, like, her character description was probably just ex-wife.
Yeah.
See, this is the problem. Like, I'm like, why do I keep bringing up gender? I'm like, oh, right, it's because half the other time we're talking about female roles.
Her character.
Yeah.
All you knew her for was because she was the ex-wife of the lead.
Yeah. That's pretty thankless. And this is the second time I've seen an alumni from the TV show Chuck do that.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you remember the movie The Judge, starring Robert Downey Jr. Yes. And Robert Duvall.
Yes.
Yeah. Robert Downey Jr.'s ex-wife in that, you know, only ex-wife, was Sarah Lancaster, also from Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm now expecting a movie at some point where Zachary Levi just plays ex-husband.
Yes.
I'm sure he probably already has, come to think of it, but... Whatever. We've been talking a lot about the cast. We haven't really talked about the premise of this one.
It's funny, like, the cast is so good, and
yeah,
just the way they portrayed themselves, and majority of them I enjoyed, it was just everything around it. Oh, my goodness.
Because, it's Shane Black, and Shane Black is pretty famous for doing movies that are pretty out there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, he cut his teeth... I want to make sure I say this, because I might pick the wrong franchise, but I'm pretty sure it was... Yeah, Lethal Weapon.
Right.
Because he cut his teeth on Lethal Weapon 1 and 2, and then he did a lot of classic 80s and 90s action movies, like he also did Last Boy Scout, Last Action Hero, Long Kiss Goodnight, and then he... Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, one of my favorite underrated movies in recent history, The Nice Guys.
Oh, really? I didn't know he did that. I forgot.
I love The Nice Guys. But he also did, rather infamously, Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Now, I liked Iron Man 3, but I know a lot of people that don't.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. It's just something I never wanted to see again in my lifetime.
Well, like, I heard somebody describe it like this, and I kind of agree with the statement. It's a pretty good Shane Black movie, but a pretty meh Iron Man movie.
Right, right.
Which is probably accurate, which is why, like, you know, certain people can have affection for it, other people not so much.
No.
And I think that's kind of what we got here.
I hate to say it. You know, I'm not going to put Shane Black on such a high pedestal, but it's just like, I mean, he could have done more.
He probably could have. I mean,
like, this is a bad movie and just a pretty poor Shane Black movie.
I wouldn't say it's a bad movie.
I think it's a bad movie.
Well, interesting. We're actually going to disagree a bit
on this. Yeah, yeah. And it's not because it was, like, bad in terms of writing and just structurally.
No.
It was bad because of potential, I think.
It was very possible because, like, he really tried to go in some new places with it, and it feels like he was getting pulled back. But they were still going in the quasi-new direction that they didn't actually go in.
Right, right. Like my thing is, I looked at the start of the movie. And I love the actual start of the movie. I think it was awesome. Because, like,
yeah,
this is what I was expecting it to be. And then it gradually just turns into an action comedy.
Yeah, which is usually what happens with Shane Black movies,
right.
But it kind of did it a disservice as a result.
Right, and that's why I think it's a bad movie. Like, that's my main thing.
I don't think it's enough to make it a bad movie, but I can totally understand why you didn't like it.
Yeah.
I hear your opinion, James. I respect your opinion,
no,
but you're wrong.
No, Peter, fair enough.
Yeah, there it is. It's been so long since we've said that. Hashtag fair enough. Yeah, well, no, I can totally understand what you probably, because we can't really get into too much of the spoilers here, because we really shouldn't.
Yeah,
but
there's a couple things we can spoil without it really affecting the overall plot.
You're probably a better judge of this than me. Do you want to go ahead and...
Well, I mean, just a couple of things in terms of, like I said, going into an action comedy routine is the gradual progression of, like, the first scene. It's a very intense scene where we're kind of introduced to the threatening nature of the predator.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of get, okay, yeah, well, things have gone downhill for our lead here. And Quinn. Quinn is his first name, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I don't know why I wanted to call him Kentucky so much throughout this show. I mean, throughout the movie. It's like, I just want... Because we had one character, Trevante Rhodes, who's actually the kid, who's the adult version of the kid from Moonlight.
Right.
Yeah, and,
He's
a great
Nebraska, isn't he?
Yeah, Nebraska. Like I said, and I wanted to call the main guy Kentucky the entire time. Because I've heard Nebraska, I just wanted to call him Kentucky for some reason.
We should just call each other by, like, our states now.
Yeah.
Our provinces. Can call me BC.
I'm VA, so there we go. We're just gonna
yeah.
call. But once going back, Trevante has such a he did a very good job, like, being that subtle but funny but bad, just great character, like, just hard character, but without being too hard and unlikable like Boyd's character was, and not being completely over the top like poor Keegan. But
he was pretty over the top, but, like, considering the history his character has,
yeah,
it kind of makes sense.
It made sense. No, it made sense. Same thing like Thomas James's character. It made sense as to why they are like they are. But, like I said, it starts off with this great suspenseful scene. And then we kind of get, like, a little bit of an info dump. And then
yeah.
we have another great suspenseful scene with Olivia Munn's character. That,
yeah,
like, hit a high note. And I was like, oh, man, we're off to the races now for something. And then we had the moment where we meet all of the characters, the main characters right now, that are in this group that are going to, you know, eventually try to take on the Predator. And it just goes, to me, off the rails from the perspective of what we could have started off with. Because now we got a situation where we have a kid, little Jacob, who, for some reason, even though he has Asperger's, he has the ability...
Was it Asperger's or was it just autism?
No, they kept saying it over and over again as Asperger's.
Okay.
Yeah. I know they say autism with certain aspects, but, like, they repeated Asperger's, like, a lot.
Right, okay, yeah, because I knew he was on the spectrum.
Right.
That was the thing.
And then...
Man, that's coming up a lot in film these days, isn't
it? Yeah. And it was one of those things where I respect the idea of what they were trying to go with.
Yeah.
But this is ridiculous. This kid,
it really kind of was.
This kid knows how to work all the Predator's equipment.
I know. That's probably where it... Yeah, because... Without giving too much away of what happens, a major part of the movie is a kid gets into a Predator suit.
Right.
And can use it.
And can use it without problems.
Like, and that... Like, more than, like, the quirky characters that end up teaming up with our supposed protagonist. Like I said, it's kind of bland to begin with, and then it's completely overshadowed by these more interesting characters. Not just them, like, you know, the kind of oddballs, but even like Olivia Munn in her, like, more... She's pretty straight-laced.
Right, and she's there really for just, like, information dumps and revelations.
Well, it's like if everyone else were, like, the townspeople in Halloween, she would essentially be Loomis. Yeah. And I'm totally on board with that, by the way, if they ever do another Halloween remake where it's like, let's just redo it and have Loomis be Olivia Munn.
Yeah, we'll switch it up a little bit, but I think it'll work.
Yeah, it's probably these... Yeah, it's like, all that's going on, and that's fine. Like, even if when it gets more comedic, it works. Because, I mean, if you watch the first Predator, the squatties are so hilariously over the top.
Right, it's still not the most serious, grounded action movie you will ever see.
No, like, it's kind of the point, because you see the macho American stereotypes getting just shredded by this unstoppable beast. Yeah, and it's really well presented, because it's, like, an interesting threat and of course we get the famous, if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Right.
If you've ever seen Predator the musical, if it bleeds, we can kill it. Now it's all up to me. yeah. No, yeah, that's the part that they probably went to. Like, because, I mean, Shane Black goes to some absurd locations with his ideas. I mean, you know, look at some of the stuff that happened in Iron Man 3.
Right, right.
But this was...
This was rough. Like, this was a really rough watch. And not to, like I said, I don't want to spoil too much of the overall narrative, but I will just give people that haven't seen it or looking forward to it, especially considering the posters. Like, I mean, it's not like it's unknown that we're going to get some Predator versus Predator action just from the posters alone.
Yeah, no.
Don't get excited about it. I'll just warn you right now.
No, that's
not
really
get excited about it.
That's the thing, because this is the problem, because we've got a franchise that wants to genuinely be awesome, but Shane Black is... This is why he was probably not the best choice for this film in the end, because he doesn't go for the badass moments most of the time.
Right.
And this is one where he probably should have gone for more. I'm going to say probably. He should have.
He definitely should have.
I'll just flat out say it. Like, you should have done more. And because there was... Most of the other stuff was done really well. Like, especially with what happens with the squad and what they end up doing.
Yeah, the action scenes, especially the last, let's say, 15 minutes. Great. Like, that's what I wanted to see, too.
Yeah. It's just, there's a big chunk in the middle of this movie, which is Grant, like, what is it? It's an hour and seven.
It's I think 97 minutes.
No, it's 10:07 in total, including credits. So it's about a full 100.
Okay.
Give or take, it's a good chunk of it. I keep wanting to say like half an hour, but I think it's slightly more than that.
Yeah, I want to say at least 45 minutes, because it's like that between the introduction to all the characters that we're going to really get involved with, until about a Predator versus Predator battle. It's probably about a good 35 to 40 minutes of just random stuff happening.
I'm going to say at least 30.
Yeah. Including a moment that like made me think about Stranger Things Season 2.
Yeah. I can imagine why.
Yeah, because there's one introduction of an enemy type that it was like, oh man, they watched Stranger Things 2 and thought, like, what could we do to do this? What they did, and just completely do it the opposite way.
Yeah, that was weird. It was definitely one of the things I didn't need added to the lore. Yeah. Put it that way. I mean, it makes sense, but at the same time, it's like, why?
Did it though?
It totally does. I don't want to get into, because does it matter if we spoil this?
I don't think so, because it really doesn't... It's not that big of a deal.
Okay. So we get a predator dog.
Yeah.
Which I believe is what they actually credited it as. And I know, I think it's what most people call it anyway. Without getting too much in, though, like, if you consider the predators to be hunters, it kind of makes sense that they would have war beasts.
Right.
Or hunting beasts.
Yeah, I got that. I definitely got that.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. That's why it makes sense to me. I mean, the actual, like, look and use of the creature in the movie,
Yeah, and my only thing is the fact that we've never seen or heard or just gotten a slight view of anything like this before.
Well, I mean, I'm always fine with that because they're always giving the predators new weapons and right. stuff, too. So, honestly, I that doesn't bother me that much. Maybe a little, but, I mean, it's one of those things.
And
not like,
only that, it's just the way that they reacted by the end of it. Like,
No, you can totally be mad about that.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's like, I don't mind...
You don't mind you don't mind the introduction, it's just the usage.
Yeah, that's which is usually how it goes with me. I'm like, oh, again, world building. I'm like, okay, I can get behind this. Oh, this is kind of dumb, yeah. though. Yeah. All right, well, just wake me up when Melkor arrives. Going back to Lord of the Rings. I'm throwing out so many references today. I'm throwing out so many references and getting oddly focused on characters' gender for no good reason. It's a weird day.
It's a weird, weird day. But every other day is Tuesday. Or everyone else is Tuesday.
Damn it, Bison. Okay, we're making Street Fighter the movie references. I think we need to wrap this up.
Oh, man. Overall, what's your thoughts?
I do think if you like Shane Black especially, you probably will like it. But if you're a diehard Predator fan, yeah. you'll probably not like this.
Yeah, and that's where I'm coming in on. And I'm not even that diehard of a fan. It was just one of those things that I kind of had the expectations of it. The opening sequences were like, wow, okay, this is what I'm looking forward to. I'm excited to strap myself in for this, and then I don't get any of it. And I thought about it a couple of days ago, and I think, I don't know if you agree with it, but to me, this is just Rampage.
No,
this is Rampage without, like, just... I mean, we have the friendly... We have one friendly enemy that becomes an enemy, and you have to take it down. You have other enemies that surround that you have to take down. And you have silly characters that really add nothing to the plot.
To me, this is more just an ode to Shane Black's film career. Because we got, like, the Predator stuff, we get... Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. We got a little bit of Lethal Weapon. Not so much the Lethal Weapon, but we got a little bit. We absolutely got some Last Boy Scout in this.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we got, but the problem was we got too much Monster Squad. We didn't need Monster Squad.
So you know, you make a very good point. I'll have to agree with you because it's like,
I don't think I mentioned, like, Monster Squad.
No, yeah. But it's just like you said, it's just like all of his ideas of what he thought were great movies. You put them into a blender and just added the Predator to it.
He even added a bit of Iron Man 3, which, again, people probably weren't too happy about.
Well, that's not to say he doesn't think that was a great movie.
Well, these are movies he did, though.
Right. And like I said, that's not to say he doesn't think they're great.
Yeah. Of course, I would be proud of everything I made, too. But, you know, I was about to make a really dirty joke there. I'm not going to make it. you can probably guess where I was going with it.
Yeah.
No, I would still say under certain circumstances check it out, but I mean,
I say Redbox Rental.
I do not blame you for not liking it, but I don't think it was a bad movie.
Redbox
Rental. I think it was a flawed movie for
and
sure.
If you have nothing else to watch, it's one of those movies you have nothing else to watch, and you just want to laugh at Keegan Michael.
Nah, it's you
want to like see Thomas Jane in a new light. Did I say Dredd?
Who sees Thomas Jane in a new light? Watch the scene from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Freaking vegan police.
Oh, man. Great stuff. Thomas Jane's a national treasure.
He really is.
He really is.
I'll totally give you that. Well, on that note, Thomas Jane, you ever want an interview, we'll be happy to talk to you.
We'll be 57 on the list, but we'll be there.
57? I think you're giving us too much credit. Well, thank you for joining me today, James.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Not as pleasurable as watching The Predator, but overall it's a pleasure.
I don't know how to take that. I think I'm just going to go check on my carpet and make sure it hasn't gotten any ants. Till next time, folks, have yourselves a good day.